Next is a lecture on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 2nd chapter, text number 39, given on Jamastami Day, August 10th, 1993, at Radadesh, Belgium.
Translation. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. I'm going to read the Krishna book for the purport to this verse, although there's a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, and we'll discuss the points in both purports. So this is the chapter of the demigods' prayers. When, as the Krishna book begins, or 10th canto, it is a time of distress on the earth due to the unnecessary military forces of the demons, especially the demon Kamsa. So the bereaved earth went to the demigod Brahma and asked for some relief. And Brahma, with all the demigods, went to the Svetadvipa, spiritual planet within the material universe. And there, Lord Brahma sat on the edge of the ocean, of Shiradakshai ocean, of milk. And by meditation, he prayed the Purusha Shukta prayer and heard, only he could understand, the message from the Lord that, yes, I am aware of the difficulties on earth and I will soon come to relieve the situation. So the demigods should start appearing now as my elders. I will come along with my internal energy and Balaram. So then he appeared, where today is the appearance day, or tonight at midnight we celebrate the appearance of Krishna. So this is the second chapter. As you know, Krishna said, the demigods or my eternal associates should come into this world, and then, because he has to have a mother and father and elders and friends, because his activities are nara-lila, or human-like. So his mother and father were Devaki and Vasudev. So we hear how they were married, and on the day of their marriage, they were being taken home in a celebration to Vasudev's house, driven by the bride's brother on the chariot, Kamsa. But Kamsa heard the voice in the sky, "Oh, Kamsa, you fool, you don't know that you're driving the chariot of your sister, but her eighth child will kill you." So Kamsa immediately started moving to kill his sister. But Vasudev intervened by speaking very reasonable words about the inevitability of death, transmigration of the soul. But that was not very convincing for a demon like Kamsa. Then Vasudev spoke more diplomatically and said, he was thinking to do anything to save this immediate situation so my wife is not killed. He said, "Don't do this. My wife will not kill you. The voice, if you want to believe the voice, it said the eighth child, so whatever children we have, we will give them to you to do as you like. But don't do this very inauspicious act." So on that promise, Kamsa relented. Then year after year, the first child was born, and true to his promise, Vasudeva presented him to Kamsa. Kamsa was pacified. But then, Narada Muni went to Kamsa and told him some things that disturbed him. Narada wanted to accelerate the appearance of Krishna as soon as possible. So when the evil would be filled up, then Krishna would come. And then Kamsa would finally be removed. So Narada said, Kamsa, you should be more concerned because any child could kill you, actually. Then Kamsa imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki, and they had children, and he killed each child. So then, with the seventh child, Lord Krishna ordered his Yogamaya to arrange that the seventh child be his first expansion, Sankarshan, or Balaram. He would appear first in the womb of Devaki, but then be drawn to the womb of Rohini by Yogamaya. So he would be safely born there in Gokula, where Rohini is one of the wives of Nanda Maharaj. So in that way, unbeknownst, that child would be saved. And it appeared that Devaki had a miscarriage, her seventh child. Then she again became pregnant. But this was not an ordinary pregnancy. The Srimad Bhagavatam informs us that Krishna appeared in the mind of or the heart of Vasudev. The word Vasudev means where Krishna appears. It is a state which we all can attain to. Vasudev or Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Because his heart was pure and because he long desired that Krishna appear as his son, Krishna appeared. And then, by transfer, by meditation, Krishna was transferred from the mind of Vasudev to the mind or heart of Devaki. So it was not by seminal injection as a conditioned soul appears. And that is also stated in this verse, that your appearance is not as a result of fruit of activities. Then, when Krishna, so in the human way, Krishna then appeared to be the growing embryo or the pregnancy of Devaki. And at that time, she looked very, very beautiful, unusually beautiful, more than usual, because of bearing Krishna. And Kamsa noticed this. He was very Krishna conscious in an unfavorable way. He was always thinking of Krishna. Krishna's going to come and kill me. So he thought, what to do? Shall I kill her? But then he thought, if I do that, it will ruin my reputation to kill my sister when she's pregnant. And anyway, how can I oppose the will of Lord Vishnu? He even knew, although he was a demon, the demons were more spiritually educated in those days. He knew that Vishnu is the supreme power and that ultimately he will win out. I shouldn't do this abominable act by which everyone will hate me. So he would decide to bide his time and see what would happen. If there was a child, then he would act. So during that time, Mother Devaki was very anxious. She knew what child was in her womb this time. But she had mixed feelings. That is very wonderful. And Krishna is going to appear in my humble self. But I'm very afraid that Kamsa will do what he's done with every child before. So to assure her, the demigods appeared invisibly in the in place of imprisonment in Mathura. And they made these very philosophical prayers with different points about the appearance of Krishna that was about to take place. And this verse is one of them. So he says, the demigods say that Krishna's appearance is not forced, so there's no other cause than your pleasure potency. And here's the corresponding passage in the Krishna book. O dear Lord, the demigods continued, you are unborn. Therefore, we do not find any reason for your appearance other than your pleasurable pastimes. Although the reason for the appearance of the Lord is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, he descends just to give protection to the devotee and vanquish the non-devotee. Actually, he descends for his pleasure meeting with the devotees, not really to vanquish the non-devotees. The non-devotees can be vanquished simply by material nature. The action and reaction of the external energy of material nature, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, are being carried on automatically. But simply by taking shelter of your holy name, because your holy name and your personality are non-different, the devotees are sufficiently protected. The protection of the devotees and the annihilation of the non-devotees are actually not the business of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he descends, it is just for his transcendental pleasure. There cannot be any other reason for his appearance. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sanyavani Pastatari Satani. This is the confidential reason for Krishna's appearance. Bhagavad Gita Paritranaya Sarana Vinishaya Chidiskritam Dharma Sartapana Paya Sambhavam Yuge Yuge. To vanquish the demons, to rescue the devotees, I come. But here Prabhupada says that actually that's not the reason. That's an external reason. Krishna does that along with his inner mission. Just for give an ordinary example, you may go out somewhere. Say your important business is to visit a certain friend. But while you're out, you also go to this. Since you're out in your car in the neighborhood, you may go shopping. So Krishna comes for his pleasure pastimes. Or different incarnations of Krishna come. But maybe we need a window open? Devotees are nodding out. So his real purpose is his pleasure pastimes, and the secondary reason is to kill the demons and rescue the devotees. Of course, that is important activity, but the reasoning is, the secondary is important activity, but the reasoning is, he doesn't personally have to come to do that. It's not so demanding work that Kamsa was so terrible that Krishna had to personally come in his original form. Just by blowing a wind or creating a little tidal wave or making a little heart attack in a person, Krishna can vanquish that person through these agents. He doesn't have to come. So, and that is the meaning of saying that he doesn't come to vanquish the demons. And the Krishna book we read, it says that devotees by chanting Hare Krishna, they also have solace. But he doesn't have to come just to rescue them either. And what is this? What are these pleasure pastimes that Krishna comes for? And especially we're talking today is the appearance of Krishna, not one of the other incarnations of Krishna. Because Janmashtami is the appearance of Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, whose pastimes, some of his pastimes are depicted there, the killing of various demons, playing with the cowherd boys and the gopis, and some of the maps of the Dham where he enacted these activities, Nandagram, Barshana, Govardhan, Vrindavan. So this Krishna, whose appearance day we are observing, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original Personality of Godhead, he appears for his pleasure pastimes. There's a description of this, a little more the nature of what the pastimes are and what the pleasure is, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Adi Lila, chapter 3, in connection with describing the identity of Lord Chaitanya, first the identity of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described, and why he comes into this world. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, absorbed in transcendental love, Lord Sri Krishna enjoys in Braja with his devoted servants, friends, parents, and conjugal lovers. Purport, the descent of Sri Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, is very purposeful. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that one who knows the truth about Sri Krishna's descent and his various activities is at once liberated and does not have to fall again to this existence of birth and death after he leaves his present material body. So that's in the fourth chapter. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo vedi tatpata chakvadi ham puna janma naiti mameti sojana. This subject that we're discussing, this event that we're celebrating, Janmashtami, is so such vital importance that if you can understand it, then you are liberated and you can go back to Godhead. Why Krishna comes? What is the nature of his activities? He does not, upon taking death, take another material body, but he comes to me, Krishna says. In other words, one who factually understands Krishna makes his life perfect. Imperfect life is realized in material existence in five different relationships we share with everyone within the material world: neutrality, servitorship, friendship, filial love, and amorous love between husband and wife, or lover and beloved. These five enjoyable relationships with the material world are perverted reflections of relationships with the absolute personality of Godhead in the transcendental nature. That absolute personality, Sri Krishna, descends to revive the five eternally existing relationships. Thus he manifests his transcendental pastimes in Braja, so that people may be attracted into that sphere of activities and leave aside their imitation relationships with the mundane. Then, after fully exhibiting all such activities, the Lord disappears. So now we have some more specific information about the pleasure pastime. Pleasure is in relationship to his devotees, that Krishna finds pleasure in that way, reciprocating with his pure devotees, and especially in these rasas. Five rasas are mentioned here, but sometimes it is said that there are only four, that the neutrality rasa is not present in Vrindavan. Everything is colored in Vrindavan with the spontaneous love for Krishna. Even the dasya rasa, or the rasa of servitude, is not like dasya in Vaikuntha, with awe and reverence, but it's with affection, in the Braja mood. So this is what Krishna finds pleasure in. We may not usually think about what is the pleasure of God. We think, well, God is perfect. He has no particular preference. Everything is perfect and absolute in him. But actually, Krishna, he has different pastimes according to the nature of different devotees, and he derives more pleasure out of some than in others. Just as we have proclivity and preference, Krishna does also. He's not very pleased, for example, by non-devotees, although he deals with them through the material energy. He's not so pleased either, although somewhat pleased, by materialistic religionists who go to him wanting different things. And he certainly is pleased by the devotees in Vaikuntha. But Krishna appears in Goloka Vrindavan, or Krishna Loka. There are three departments or locations. Mathura, Dwarka, and Gokul, or Braj. And so it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that in Mathura, Krishna is perfect. In Dwarka, he is more perfect. And in Vrindavan, he is most perfect. So he gets the most pleasure when he can be himself in his original form in these playful pastimes without awe and reverence, but full affection with his parents, with his friends, with the gopis, and even with the animals and the trees and the land of Vrindavan. So he comes to enjoy with them. But one might say, since Krishna is already enjoying like that in the Goloka Braj, then why come here and do it here? So that is explained here. He manifests his transcendental pastimes in Braj, meaning here it means within this material world. When he's in the spiritual world, it's called aprakat, unmanifested. When he comes here, it's prakat. So that people may be attracted into that sphere of activities and leave aside their imitation relationships. So this is why Krishna comes into the world, to show his topmost pleasure pastimes, and by displaying them, invite us to join them. If he didn't come and they weren't displayed and they weren't recorded, and his pure devotees didn't know them to tell us, then how would we know? And we would stay, we would have no reason not to stay stuck in these family, in these material relationships of servant-master, that like we have with our government, we're the servant of the government, and servant of different things, servant of our boss, or other relationships of friendship, parenthood, and lover-beloved, conjugal love. We would be stuck in these and have to have repeated birth and death. And this verse that we're reading today, it says Krishna, he's not an ordinary person. He doesn't come by karma. He doesn't come even to subdue the atheists. And similarly, the jivas, the spirit souls, they're the same quality as Krishna. They also don't have to come in that way. They don't have to undergo birth and death. He says, similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age. And it's interesting that Prabhupada translates it differently in the Krishna book. Here, there's no particular mention of the holy name, but in the Krishna book, he adds, in his summary, his free summary study presentation, he says, by taking shelter of your holy name, because your holy name and your personality are none different, the devotees are sufficiently protected. So the devotees have the spiritual quality by which they can take shelter of Krishna and, like Krishna, then not be under the material laws and not have to have repeated birth and death. And the crucial way to do this is by chanting, by hearing, to enter the pastimes of Krishna, and particularly these pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So there will be readings later in the day to tell some of the transcendental drama of this occasion, how Krishna appeared. And began all the pastimes. Exhibits one after another continually in the spiritual world and in the material worlds. These pastimes are always going on. So I'll stop here and see if there's some discussion or questions about this topic. Yes. Yeah, what I can do is read you those references. We hear this, and sometimes some devotee speaks, says this, and other devotee says, "Well, Prabhupada didn't say that. This is some new philosophy that Krishna was born in Vrindavan. Krishna was born in Mathura." But it's not a fact that Prabhupada didn't say this. So, one place he says it, it's in the purport to 10.3.47. The verse says, "Exactly when Vasudeva, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as the daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda." Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses that Krishna appeared simultaneously as the son of Devaki and as the son of Yashoda, along with the spiritual energy, Yogamaya. As the son of Devaki, he first appeared as Vishnu, and because Vasudeva was not in the position of pure affection for Krishna, Vasudeva worshipped his son as Lord Vishnu. So Mother Devaki and Vasudeva, their relationship with Krishna is filled with awe and reverence. So he appeared before them as Vishnu, and they made their prayers in that mood to him. Although Prabhupada explains there that Mother Devaki is moving a little bit, or is moving towards the Vrindavan mood, but she's more fixed in the awe and reverence. So therefore, he did not appear in his original form in Mathura, but as Vishnu. Vasudeva worshipped him as Lord Vishnu. Yashoda, however, pleased her son, Krishna, without understanding his godhood. This is the difference between Krishna as the son of Yashoda and as the son of Devaki. This is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti on the authority of Hari Bamsa. Also, in Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Srila Rupa Goswami, this is described in detail. And in other Goswami books also. Then again, it's explained in purport, 10.5, verses 1 and 2. This is the birth ceremony being observed by Nanda Maharaj for his son Krishna. And the purport, there's some discussion, and Prabhupada says, "In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur desires to prove with evidence from many shastras that Krishna actually took birth as the son of Yashoda before the birth of Yogamaya, who is therefore described as the Lord's younger sister. Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, and even though it is possible that this was not done, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, such events are regarded as factual. According to the opinion of some authorities, Krishna was actually born as the son of Yashoda." So the ceremony of Krishna's birth is called Nandotsava. And then there are other references. I have a list of them. They're like indirect, but I'm reading three direct ones. There's another one. Let's see. Here's another one. What happened is that Vasudeva, he then went back. That baby that he delivered merged into the Krishna born of Mother Yashoda. And then he took the girl baby, Yogamaya, from her and brought him back to the prison. So then Kamsa came and he saw that baby and he tried to kill that baby. "The child Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yashoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? And throughout the 10th canto, once you understand this, then other references become clearer. Like in one of the songs of the Gopis, in the Gopi Gita, the first verse of that chapter, they say, the land of Vrindavan has been made glorious by your birth here. And other references that Krishna is the son of Mother Yashoda, or that he was born in Vrindavan. But this is kept somewhat covered and doesn't contradict that Krishna appeared in Mathura and is the son of he's Devaki Nandan, he's the son of Devaki and Vasudev. So all these things can be reconciled by Krishna's inconceivable pastimes. Yes. I don't know. Yes. Just like in Krishna's relationship with Srimati Radharani, they grew up, and then they met each other for the first time. Then, which is a certain mood, a relationship when they first met, a very sweet relationship called Purva Rag, when Radharani first saw him. Who is this beautiful boy, Krishna? And Radharani says, who is Radharani? And then they have other pastimes where they're meeting more, and then there's pastimes of separation. So we hear of these one at a time, but although it's inconceivable to us, our experience is so limited. But in the spiritual world, all those things are always going on at the same time. And Radharani, although she's met Krishna, she's always thinking that she hasn't met Krishna, and she's meeting Krishna for the first time, and she's in separation from Krishna, and she's with Krishna. We're given a little bit only, according to the little bit we can understand. That so many things are happening. Even in our own life, or if there is a biography like the biography of Prabhupada, tell all the main activities of his life, everything that we could know. But in a person's life, even in one day, so many things are happening. But with an ordinary person, all those things that are happening, it's like he's asleep practically, or they're so mundane that they're worthless. But the fact is that even an ordinary person's consciousness and experience, it's so multifaceted, it couldn't be completely captured. So what to speak of the Supreme Lord, who's fully conscious, fully blissful, and full of knowledge, who can understand all his pastimes? It said about Lord Chaitanya that even one day, when he was in Vrindavan, when he visited there, that one day couldn't even be described by Ananta if he spoke for thousands of years with his thousands of hoods. And so Krishna, when his experience is just incomprehensible to us. He's experiencing everything at the same time and relishing everything. So in a sense, we shouldn't even try to understand it by what we usually, what passes for understanding by us is some logical, rational understanding, as if it's under our supervision. But we can only understand a little bit. And then as we perform devotional service, more can be understood in our hearts. Or as Srila Prabhupada used to say, when questions about the spiritual world became a little too specific, he would say, when you go there, then you will know. So many questions can be asked. How do they eat? How do they walk? So whatever we get, we can be happy with. It's already enough. They've given us so much. And we read in the Jiva Goswami's Satsandarbha that there are the Bhagavatam that we have, 18,000 verses, is like a small edition. And the demigods in higher planets, they have Srimad Bhagavatams with millions of verses. But we can't understand more than this. So there are Bhagavatams with millions of verses, and then beyond Bhagavatam, there are actual pastimes, and they're unlimited.
Lord Krishna came and performed all these pastimes to attract and relieve the entities. And who is eligible to enter the Krishna's pastimes, and what's the
eligibility? The one who has, as he states here, who has given up the five relationships in this world, and has transferred all his attention and love to Krishna's activities, Krishna's service, by serving the spiritual master, by hearing about Krishna, chanting. That soul can go back to Godhead. As in the verse, Janma Karma Cha Me Divyam, the one who fully understands Krishna Tattvata, the one who fully understands Krishna, the one who has... there's so many Bhagavad Gita verses that describe... Bhaktyamam abhijanati navanyaschasmi tatpata tatomam tatpato gyatva visite taranantaram. One who is fully engaged in pure devotional service, who always thinks of me. So the person qualified to enter Krishna's pastimes is described in those verses as pure devotee with no more material attachment, having reached the highest stage of perfection. So it may take many, many lifetimes as a devotee to become a perfect lover of Krishna, have such desire. Another way to answer your question is the person who has great desire to enter the pastimes of Krishna goes. Prabhupada said most people, they're not interested in the pastimes of Krishna. They're interested in so many novels of fiction and cinema. They're not interested in Krishna's pastimes. Or if they're told about going there, they don't want to go there. Prabhupada wrote the book Easy Journey to Other Planets. He said he was selling that book, one librarian saw the title and said, "This looks very good, Swamiji. So we can actually go to the higher planets?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." And he said, "And then we can come back." Prabhupada said, "No, once going, you never come back." "Oh," he said, "I would not be interested in that." So they want to stay in this material world. But the person who has the price of lolium, a great desire, he can go back to Godhead. Prabhupada would quote that verse by Rupa Goswami, "If you hear that love of God is for sale in the market, then go at once and purchase it. But what is the price? The price is your desire to have it." "Oh, that sounds all right. All right, I'll pay for that. Here's my desire." No, that's not, your desire is not good enough. It takes koti janma. The lolium takes koti janma to develop many, many lifetimes. But whoever has that kind of desire, I must go back to Godhead. I must hear about the pastimes of Krishna. I don't care anything about this material world and karmic activities. And that person is becoming eligible. But if we hear something about Krishna, but still basically our heart is in this material world, then how can we go back to Godhead? We read in Nectar of Devotion that it's the characteristics of devotional service are very rarely attained because Krishna is purchased by pure devotion. He gives himself. So those who can go back to Godhead are very rare. Srila Prabhupada is so powerful and kind that he's giving us the means to develop just this, the desire and the qualification. Yes. How what? So your question is, but what he also said was that you should or you can go back to God in this one lifetime. Yes, so they're both possible. Sometimes people would ask, how long does it take to develop Krishna consciousness? He would say, only a minute. It only takes a minute. Or you may not be able to do it in millions of lifetimes. So the both was stated. When you completely surrender, it's not a set thing. Like in university studies, you must do 2 years of this and 4 years of this, 2 years of this, and you get your medical degree or your law degree. But this thing, it might go on and on and on, or you could do it very quickly. Anyway, for us, this is just like mental speculation. We have to practice our sadhana as best we can, not expect by some extraordinary way all of a sudden we'll go back to Godhead. Prabhupada gives the example of the Indian poet Rabindranath Tagore. He never went to school or college, yet he won the Nobel Prize and he got a honorary degree from Oxford University. But if you think that I'll take that path, I won't go to school and I'll get an honorary degree, that's a very exceptional thing. So we should go ahead and make all the effort. And then we can see, or Krishna will see how sincere we are. So many devotees, they make their ultimate prayer that, my dear Lord, I may not be qualified to go back to God in this lifetime. So wherever I have to go, that's all right. But I just pray that I can get again the association of the Vaishnavas and hear about your activities. Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanivas Janame Janame Hai E Abhilas Naratam Das Thakur sings like that. This is my wish, that life after life I can be in the association of devotees and serve them. And then Prabhupada says, actually, that then back to Godhead is as good as achieved if you become fully attached to Krishna and to hearing about him. Even in this world, you have attained the essence. So we can keep our attitude like that. Try to fulfill Prabhupada's statement. His spiritual master said that also. Finish up your business. Don't come back to this world. Don't be complacent and think, I'll come back. But try to finish up your business. Get out of this nasty world. Go back to Godhead. But at the same time, with a humble estimation of ourselves, we may pray like these great Vaishnavas and say, "My Lord, I may not be so qualified to go back to Godhead, but please let me again, let me get the best association and continue my path." Prabhupada's like promises to us or guarantees, they imply that we're going to reciprocate and do the most we can, and then we can qualify. We sometimes criticize the cheap attitude that some Christians take, that going to heaven or the kingdom of God is very easy, that I'm definitely going to go there. They're all very convinced they're going to go there, although just by statements of faith, but they're not actually given up all material attachments or developed love of God. So we also can't think like that, that I can be attached to material body and mind, but because I go to the temple, I'll go back to Godhead. Yeah. But still, that promise is there, that he says that you will, if you do like this, you'll go back to Godhead. Prabhupada, in a conversation with the poet Allen Ginsberg, they were talking about the horrors of Kali Yuga, and Allen Ginsberg said, "Well, what about your disciples? Where will they be when all this is going on?" He said, "Oh, they will be." Prabhupada said, "They will be with Krishna." So let us, it's up to us to fulfill that promise by fully engaging in Prabhupada's mission and thereby becoming completely detached from this world and completely attached to Krishna. That's the science of transmigration. Whatever you think of at the time of death, if the time of death you have no desires, nothing to come back for, nothing to lament, nothing to come back to desire, but you're simply thinking of Krishna, and Krishna says, "You come to me." But if you have some idea of something to fulfill, then you have to come back. Why don't you understand it? That at least you can understand that there is in the material world there is such thing as good, best, perfect, and super good, which are all within the category of excellent. Like in a university exam, the top mark, at least in the American system, would be to get an A, or whatever the figure is. But sometimes someone writes such an outstanding paper that the professor is just overwhelmed. He wants to give some other marks. So he gives A+. This is something extraordinary. So perfect is A, and then most perfect. So at least we know materially there is such a thing, something more than perfect. So what it means is that although they're all absolute, the Vrindavan is perfect. And the reason is that although all the devotees love Krishna, the devotees in Vrindavan, they love Krishna so much that he subordinates himself to them. And he becomes the child and the lover in ways that he doesn't do in other places. So Krishna has a right, if he likes, to find one place more perfect than anything else that he does.